Creative was born part of awe and part of disgust. It was the first imperial triumph he had witnessed, and for all his discomfort with the reasons for the celebration, it was undeniable that Caracalla knew how to put on a show. Rome was garlanded in flowers of all colours and varieties. Roses, hyacinths, violets and narcissi bedecked the temples, shops, public buildings and private dwellings. A vast crowd thronged the streets. Sir Silas was shoulder to shoulder with jostling onlookers. Not the tallest, despite his Celtic ancestry, he had to stand on tiptoes to get the best view. The screaming around him rose to an even higher pitch and volume as the first riders passed, officers of the Praetorian Guard, resplendent in polished armour, immaculately behaved mounts, groomed so not a hair was out of place. And Silas thought he would be deafened when they caught the first glimpse of Caracalla.
The emperor rode in a gold chariot, a quadriga drawn by four perfectly white horses side by side.
He was dressed in the traditional purple robe of Jupiter, with his face painted red to emulate the ancient statue of the king of the gods. Behind him, a slave held a laurel wreath above the emperor's head, but all the time he was whispering in Caracalla's ear. Silas knew the tradition. The slave was reminding Caracalla that he was a man, not a god. Silas wondered if Caracalla believed that. The emperor held the reins loosely in one hand, while with the other he waved indulgently to the adoring crowd. Beside him stood his stepmother, Julia Domna, dressed in a white stola with a purple pallor covering her head and shoulders. She bore a thin, almost pained smile, which neither Caracalla nor the onlookers noticed or heeded. At one point, Silas thought she looked directly at him, but then her gaze drifted onwards, and he decided he had imagined the moment of connection. Behind the chariot came the trophies and spoils of war, sacks overflowing with gold and silver coins, cups and bracelets decorated with precious jewels, fine weapons, martial symbols taken from the battlefield, large placards bearing illustrations of scenes of battle and pictures of the conquests of the German campaign, captured rivers and forts and forests and mountains. Marching behind these, row after endless row, came the legions, the Praetorians leading the way, then the other legions that had taken part in the campaigns, or at least as many as could be spared from guarding the borders. These were followed by dancers, flautists, and trumpet players. And in the rear, weighed down with chains and guarded by spear-wielding Praetorians, a long train of prisoners marched. Some had their heads down, flinching as stones and rotten fruit hurled by the crowd hit them. Others stared back defiantly, even growled and lunged if one of the crowd dared to dart forward to strike them. Silas's stomach clenched at the sight. Some of these were unrepentant enemies of Rome, Chatti and other Germanic tribes who wanted nothing more than to flood across the borders, tear down the temples, and burn the homes of the Roman citizens who lived peacefully in the German and Gallic provinces. But others were Alemanni, allies until Caracalla turned on them and betrayed them. Silas wondered if they knew that this was their final march, an ignominious death at the hands of the official executioners awaiting them at the climax of the show. He had heard the reasons for the betrayal over and over, from Attius, from Oclotinius, from the legionaries he talked to in the bars and taverns, and he understood on an intellectual level. The Alemanni were organising into a confederation large enough to threaten Rome, just like the Meati and Caledonians had in northern Britannia. Caracalla had ruthlessly eliminated the threat before it had become a problem. But that had been at the cost of the lives of so many, some that Silas had counted as friends. And Attius had known of the impending betrayal and done nothing to stop it. Had gone to great lengths to keep it secret, even from his closest friend, Silas. Friend, no.